The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of the station. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron. You are listening to Bicycle Talk, episode 478, to be broadcast on Wednesday, April 8th, 2026, on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch, although I think she's in the building here somewhere. If you're watching on Facebook Live, you can feel free to comment down here below, and I might be able to respond. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show and you're listening on Facebook Live, you can comment right down here below, or if you're listening to this on an audio file or on the air today, then you can send me an email at bicycletalk, the numeral 1 at gmail.com. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. Ron's rant of the week. Are you paying attention yet? Yeah, for the first time in 4 years, the national average exceeds over $4 a gallon. Diesel is close to $6. How's that bike looking now? Yeah, I'm going to keep pounding this into you until you break down and take my Peddlin' Ron challenge and end up riding that bike at least one day a week and going, hey, wait a second, why am I paying for gas at this crazy, outrageous price when I could just ride my bike instead? That's my rant of the week, but, you know, I've been through this before, and, you know, it's just, there's the solution to this problem. All you have to do is wait for the weather to turn nice and use your bike instead. I'm just about to get into that routine myself right now. I am a cold weather phobe. I don't like cold, so I'm waiting for it to get just a little bit warmer, because when I get on my bike to commute, it's usually really early in the morning and it's a little on the chilly side. But that's okay. I'll be there real soon. They're promising us 70 degree weather here within a week or so. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes. And, you know, I can bundle up. It's just, I don't like being cold. And I have the equipment for it, too. I just don't like being cold. But that's me being a wimpy commuter. But eventually, I will be commuting on the bike at least 3 or 4 days a week is what I'm looking for. So that's my hope, and we'll see how it all works out. Along with my rant, I'm going to say, when was the last time you felt really weak on your bike or really strong on your bike? Well, you know, I've been fighting with this one for quite some time now, ever since before I had the surgery on my neck, and it's just been a long, hard road back. And then I went to my local PCP and I got a whole bunch of blood work done, and lo and behold, I am severely anemic. So apparently you have to get your iron checked every once in a while. And I did, especially if you're vegetarian. I am not a vegetarian, but I don't eat a lot of red meat. And so therefore that could be part of it. I don't know. There's other ways of getting iron, but right now I'm down to letting Fran give me these super duper supplements, and we'll see if I can get the iron levels back up. I spoke with a friend of mine this morning at the community center after I taught my class, and he mentioned to me that he was running into the same problem. He'd been out running, and he said it was just getting really, really slow, and he's losing like up to a minute a mile slower when he was out for his runs, and he just attributed it to being, you know, old and getting old. And so, you know, he's 10 years younger than I am. But anyway, he said, you know, he ended up going to get his yearly physical, and he went to get checked, and they checked his blood, and guess what? He was severely anemic. He was very, very anemic. So he got himself onto some super duper iron supplements, and he said within like a week, he started feeling tremendously better. Goes out for another run, feels terrible on the run, gets back, he realizes he maybe felt terrible because he was running a mile faster. So you know what? These things do happen, and you're never going to be able to feel like, you know, $1 million, but you might feel a little bit better if you can check into that sort of thing. I'm not trying to scare anyone here, but I think it's a good idea to get certain levels, especially if you're an athlete or if you spend a lot of time being physically active, like riding your bike, either for commuting or for recreation, exercise, that sort of thing. You need to keep an eye on this stuff because it's not always old age. So I hate to pull the age card, but, you know, sometimes you have to pull the age card. But next time you go to get some blood work done, make sure your doc puts on there an iron test to see where you're at, because it's very helpful and apparently very useful, as I'm finding out. So I'll know more in another week, maybe 2 weeks. They say you really should stay on the iron for at least 4 weeks, maybe 8 weeks max. So we will, we will see where that leaves me. And I will continue to report back to you and let you know how it feels. On a positive side, I went on my very first group ride with the club this past Saturday. I actually was the ride leader, so to speak, although I didn't spend a lot of time up in the front. But anyway, went out there with my new neck and a hybrid upright bicycle. I survived, but it wasn't easy. Now, after I had done that, I got my tests back. And when I got my tests back, I found out that, you know, I've got this anemia thing. So maybe that's part of what's contributing to it. Did spend an awful lot of time in zone 4 more than I like to. And so it wasn't a particularly easy ride for me. You know, that's all right. I'm on my bike. That's the good news. And hopefully I'll be able to ride my bike a lot more. So, and we'll talk a little bit more about what happens when you're anemic and all a little bit later in the show here. Actually, it's coming up very quickly. The world's biggest bike shares are remaking cities and why safe cycling networks matter. So, you know, these bike share programs they have in the big cities, they're like completely capturing the whole atmosphere of a city. They're transitioning the public and also the cities to take a really good look at infrastructure and safer lanes for the bikes to ride in. And it's being spurred on by this whole bike share system. If you don't know what a bike share system is, it's generally a system that is provided by either a company or a city, and you buy into it, and you have you basically have a fob that you carry with you, or a cell phone that you can activate the bike that you're standing in front of, and then you can hop on it and go. A lot of these bikes are e-assist, so you have the ability to get a little bit of extra power if you need a little extra power, and all you have to do is you just got to ride the bike from wherever you are picking the bike up to another drop-off point where it will be there and ready for somebody else when they need it. It's kind of a neat system. They charge you, it's either a yearly charge or a monthly charge. I'm not sure exactly how it works. Sort of like everything that we have these days, we're always paying for something per month. But or I think you can do a flat out yearly fee, and then, you know, you don't have to worry about it. You just go up to any bike whenever it's ready and necessary for you, and it's great. So bike share makes a lot of sense. I'm going to talk a little more about that in the show. Moving on to the mechanical minute and bike tips. I've been talking a lot about VO2 max for the past few shows. We talk about VO2 max being your ability to process oxygen when you're riding your bike, which makes you, it basically helps your performance when you're riding the bike. So we all have a VO2 max, and some of ours are really high and some of ours are really low. But the winner of all time might be Mr. Tadej Pogačar. Yeah, Tadej Pogačar, and we'll talk more about him in a little while, apparently might have the highest VO2 max of any Tour de France winner in history, a new study revealed. The world champion is pushing the limits of physiological performance. So let's move on. While we're at the Ron Cycling Tips, we're going to talk a little bit about this low iron situation. Well, guess what is immediately affected by low iron? VO2. Yeah, your VO2 max, your ability to process oxygen, is greatly lowered when you have a lower iron content in your body, if you're below your normal numbers. So another good reason to get that iron checked. And again, I will keep you all abreast as to how this is all working out and in future episodes, just so you can kind of get an idea. That's what Fran and I do. We kind of are open books about our medical situations because they relate directly to the activities that we do. Primarily, our major activity is cycling. So that is why we like to pass this information on. I have so many people that said, yeah, I gave up riding my bike because it just got to be too hard. Too hard? Well, then figure out why it's too hard and do something about it. That's my answer. I know it's a little narrow-minded, but it's what it is. Hey, Michael, thanks for watching. How come Tadej's performance gives me Lance vibes? Yeah, I know. I hear that. They're being real secretive about certain things about Tadej, and I agree. I agree that there is a little bit of an Armstrong-esque worry here, but I will point out that there are some other riders, and again, I think they will come up later in the show here, that also have recorded super high VO2 maxes, and Lance, believe it or not, is not anywhere near the category of Tadej Pogačar, nor is he near the category of Greg LeMond. So, a couple names to throw out there. But, everybody's different. We all have what we have. We have the genetic thing going on. We have just amazing training, which can increase your VO2 max, although you really do kind of have a limit about where you can go there. But, we're all talking about it because they're being super secretive about Tadej, but they're also saying that, his training is basically a thing which they are guarding information on because they don't want to reveal any of the training that he's doing because they think they've got the secret sauce or whatever it is that's going on with his training. I know he's really, really, really particular about what he eats. And, there's been a lot of research over the last few years since we went through the whole Lance Armstrong thing and the whole doping thing and all that. It seems like the teams have really, really paid a lot closer attention to nutrition and the needs of each and every rider because everybody's a little different. So, there's because of the way you're made up and what your biomechanics are and what your genetics are and all that, there's a lot of there's a lot more science going into it than we used to have, which is possibly one of the reasons why the Peloton has become so much faster. And that is another thing that riders are talking about how fast it is and how they are. I've read a couple of different articles about riders that are saying, they're not much longer for professional bicycle racing because the Peloton is just too fast. And that is amazing to me that it can be, that fast that a professional rider would think of cutting their career short because they can't keep up on these rides. But I do know that there is another situation with that too. And because the Pelotons are so fast, they are tending to be a little more dangerous, maybe a lot more dangerous than they used to be because of the speed at which these guys are going at. So I don't know. There's a lot to unpack here. So it's really, really hard to say. But VO2 max is definitely something that is a determining factor here as far as this goes. And if you have reduced oxygen transport because of low iron, you're going to get lower hemoglobin levels, which decreases oxygen carrying capacity in the blood, directly impacting your VO2, VO2 max. You're going to lower your aerobic capacity. Iron deficiency decreases the production of myoglobin, which is essential for transporting oxygen to your muscles. And iron deficiency without anemia, which is called IDNA. Even if not clinically anemic, low ferritin iron stores can impair athletic performance and reduce aerobic adaptation to training and lower your VO2. And I did have my ferritin levels are also super low. So that is another thing. Now, we're a little concerned right now about, you know, why this had happened. But I have been, over the last 5 years since having my heart surgery, I've been on a low-dose aspirin, and there is a thought that there's a possibility that the low-dose aspirin has caught up with me and it's causing bleeding in my stomach lining, in my stomach walls. And anyway, I'm glad you're enjoying it, Mike. So we're going to have to research that. My cardiologist is not going to like the idea that I have taken myself off of my low-dose aspirin. Once you've had a heart situation or are threatening to possibly be in some sort of a cardiac distress, the medical industry immediately puts you on a low-dose aspirin because it has been proven that it will give you yet another 1% better chance of staying alive or not having a stroke or some sort of an incident. Now, a lot of these studies, and I'm going to be real open about this and very opinionated about this, but a lot of these studies are studies that are very general. And what that means is we're talking about everyone, not just people who are active like I am, and maybe you are who watch my show or listen to my show, but also those who haven't had any physical activity over the last 20 years and then let their bodies go to a point where they became a critical condition. So there's a fine line between the person who is very active, and I'll say what I mean by very active is that they're doing some level of cardiovascular fitness at least 3 to 5 times a week. I'm in the 5 times a week category. Sometimes it's 6. You never know. It all really depends. But I teach a lot of classes. Therefore, I maintain my cardiovascular fitness fairly well because of that. As I am told whenever I go to any kind of medical procedure and or appointment, they all say the same thing. I keep getting the exact same response. We just don't see people like you. What does that mean? It means that they don't see people that are generally more active. And it's, you know, so maybe there's a level of our medical industry that needs to be paying more attention to that. And I think you could probably find that doc if you're looking around, looking hard enough, and get to see. Fortunately, I live with Fran, and Fran has a pretty good background in the medical world, a very good background in the medical world. She's quite brilliant. But she's my She's my encyclopedia Fran. She's my information source when I go, what does this mean? And then she'll translate it over into real terms and real English. As a matter of fact, if you are interested in knowing a little bit more about this and you listen to her show, which is on just before my show is, or it is available at whus.org, that's what she talked about today. So you can get a little bit more information on that end too. And Franny will give you much more detail than I can give you. I'm a layman at this. I just ride my bike and try to pay attention to my body. That's all I do. So VO2 max increases endurance time and decreases lactate concentration during submaximal exercise. Iron supplementation. The conclusions are that increase in serum ferritin concentration after your supplement was evident in subjects with initial pre-supplementation serum ferritin concentration. There's all sorts of crazy numbers here. While only minimal in if any effect was observed in subjects with higher supplementation and the serum ferritin concentration, the doses that induced the beneficial effect on hemoglobin parameters differed from 16 to 100 milligrams of elementary iron daily. I think she's got me on around 38 or 40 milligrams daily per tablet, which I am taking twice a day. So I'm close to 100 milligrams. Close, 80 probably, right around there. 75 to 80, somewhere around there. Over a period of 6 to 8 weeks, okay, shorter supplementation protocols have been shown to be ineffective. So that's the thing. If you find that you are iron deficient and then you get into a supplement program, the recommendation here in the research I had done is 6 to 8 weeks you want to stay on to the supplement and try to get your iron levels back up. Results on this, and this is quite interesting, can be felt in anywhere from 3 to 7 days, which is kind of amazing. This is my third day at it right now, so I'll see what's going on here. But I know that my friend John, who is the runner, he said about a week after he started taking them, he all of a sudden started feeling a lot better. So fingers crossed, another bridge to cross in the never ending aging process here. But I'm going to beat it no matter what. And yeah, there may be an e-bike in my future. I keep talking about that. I keep thinking about it. But I'm really more interested in getting my fitness back, because I know where it was before I had the heart surgery. And then I know where it was a year after I had the heart surgery, and it was really good again and all the way back up and doing well. And then before the neck problem came through. And when the neck problem came through, my fitness just went to the trash can again because I had no power. So I'm working on a lot of things. I'm using a lot more weights. I'm doing a lot more exercises that are focused on building my strength. So, I'm hoping, fingers crossed once again, that I get to the bottom of this, because I would like to feel better and be able to perform better on my bicycle. And this doesn't also, just pertain to cycling. I mean, this can be any kind of sport or activity that you're doing, by the way. But I would like to get to a point where I'm feeling better and not feeling as, I don't want to use the age word here, but and not feel like I'm not myself, let's put it that way. So, and I do understand that as we age, we do start to lose muscle mass and we do start to lose some of our fitness, and it does happen. I'm just not ready to accept it yet. That's all. 39 with 31 years worth of experience, currently about to be 32. Coming up this month, oh boy, oh boy. So, anyway, let's move on to more things besides VO2 Max as we get into the show. So, here you go. So, who's liable? California prosecutors charge parents with child abuse following an e-moto crash. How about that? What do you think about that idea? So this was in Bicycle Retail and Industry News, and it was posted about 6 days ago. And the police in Long Beach said they made one arrest after responding to a group of 50 allegedly riding e-motos recklessly. So prosecutors in California have charged a mother and father with child abuse after their child crashed into a vehicle in Walnut Creek on their e-moto and was seriously injured. Very interesting. You know, where's the cutoff point on this? Now, what if you don't have a helmet on your child and there's a helmet law for your child? I know that you can, the way it works out here in this state, is you can get a $100 fine for doing that, but you could forego the fine if you were to bring evidence to a judge and say, look, I bought a helmet for my child. My child's now wearing a helmet, and they'll waive it. And that's the way it works here in Connecticut, the last I knew. I may be wrong there, and if anybody knows more about that, please, please let me know. But I believe that is the way that works. But this the e-bikes are being ridden a lot by children, and not just e-bikes, but e-motos. So the e-motos are a different level of electronic bike because they're not pedal oriented. They're not a class one or two bike. They're kind of a class three and above. They still may have pedals on them, but then again, they may not, and they may just be electric, and that's it. And those things fly. They go really, really fast. And I have seen reports on those of 60 to 70 miles per hour. So they do go super, super fast, and they are an electric rechargeable vehicle. So when you start putting kids on these things, kids who do not have driver's licenses or do not have any kind of training as to how to ride in traffic because they don't need a driver's license for it, yeah, the area gets gray. And you can kind of see why New Jersey made that crazy move on e-bikes, and now they're requiring everyone who rides an e-bike to wear a motorcycle helmet. Now, they've stepped way over the line. I think that's a big mistake, and they're being way overprotective as far as that goes. And I know that there's some serious feedback and resistance on that, and I think that that law will get changed to a certain degree here sometime soon. But anyway, just so you know, that's it's a crazy world we live in. So New Jersey has gone to the extreme. We're hoping that other states don't go that direction. I mean, if I'm riding on an electric assist bike, the maximum power I'm probably going to get out of it is maybe with assistance, I might be able to get 20 miles per hour, sometimes up to 25 miles per hour. I know I have friends who have some pretty powerful ones, but, you know, it's still, my bicycle helmet is going to help me if I should have a crash on something like that, because that's how fast I can ride if I don't have the e-assist. So, not to mention how fast I go down hills on my bicycle. That's another story in itself. Love going down hills. Ooh, why wouldn't you love going down hills? Gravity is finally on your side. It's a beautiful thing. So, anyway, this is an interesting thing that is going on in California, and let's see here. So The Contra Costa District Attorney's Office said the juvenile operator was unlicensed, and they have charged the parents on one count of child abuse, a misdemeanor. Prosecutors said the parents willfully and unlawfully permitted the child to be injured or placed in a situation where the child's health is endangered. The crash occurred on September 18th of 2025. The Light BE Moto is what it was called. It was the minor crashed his Suron Light B E-Moto, and I'm sure I could probably pull up a website on that and know what that is. He's crashed into a minivan. The minor suffered severe injuries that required emergency care at a local hospital, while the driver of the minivan was uninjured and stayed at the scene. Prosecutors say that not only did the parents allow their child to operate an E-Moto in an unsafe manner at unsafe speeds prior to the crash, he was allowed to repeatedly ride the E-Moto over a several-month period despite repeated citations and warnings from law enforcement. Sounds like the parents are not paying attention and that the kid's trying to get away with stuff. That's kind of what kids do, right? You were a kid once, right? Did you try to get away with things your parents didn't approve of? I'll leave that one wide open. District Attorney Diana Beckin said that e-bikes, quote-unquote, and e-motos are more prevalent on city streets. Now that California has new laws in the books that address public safety offenses related to e-bikes and e-motos, parents must understand the dangers these vehicles can pose to children if operated unlawfully without proper driver education. That's the three words that we need to talk about. Proper driver education. We here in the town of Mansfield are we have a program which brings every fourth grader before they leave the elementary school in our town. They all go through a proper education class that is all pertaining to bicycles. We have bicycles on hand. If kids don't have their own bikes, they can bring. They can use the bikes that we have. We have an inventory of bicycles that we use for this, and we teach kids everything there is to know about the bicycles and how to fix them, how to ride them, how to ride in traffic, how to do all the things properly before they move on to middle school. So that's a good thing. Maybe that's something that should be in more curriculum across the United States. I think we gotta start, if more and more kids are gonna get out on the road on these bikes, on these e-bikes, and not have the knowledge of what it's like to deal with traffic, then there's gonna be a lot more of this going on. So I think proper driver education is a key function and responsibility of towns, and it would be great if we could see more of that. I feel very fortunate that we're in a town that's very proactive about it and got grant money and got it taken care of. And big shout out to Lon on this. He was the driving force here, and he got a lot done. I have recently been certified to by the League of American Cyclists to or bicycles now they call them, so that I know about a bike safety program and I know how to go through that. But I am going to get a further education, which the Bike Mansfield is paying for, and that's coming up soon, I think end of April, early May or something. And I'm going to a certification course where I will be qualified to teach, and I think that will be a good thing. I think it'll be a really, really good thing. So I can get a little bit more involved in my community and help these guys out too, which would be really, really nice. So the e-motos are showing up all over the place in California, and they're showing up in groups of about as large as 50 riders riding these things down the road. We have a number of gasoline-powered small scooter-type motos that are out on the roads around here, And I know that that has been a problem in some city streets. I know Hartford has a big problem with it. We definitely have them around the Willimantic area. There's a lot of that activity going on, a lot of illegal driving on the streets. And when they go out in these big packs, and it's really hard to enforce it when you've got this big, large number of riders. And then, you know, if they are dealing with law enforcement tries to stop them, they all just shoot off in all different directions. And, you know, they get away with it. They find a little narrow alleyway or an off-road area that they can ride these things, and then they just disappear on them. And they don't have licenses. They don't have registrations. They're just kind of out, quote-unquote, terrorizing the streets, and not putting in a very good word for e-bikes, so to speak. So, I'm looking now at the Surron X Light B. These things, they retail for about $4,400, and they look like a motorcycle to me. That's exactly what it looks like. Packs a little ton of fun for all terrain, blah, 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 blah. And it has powerful yet nimble and climbing ability with over 45, it offers hours of near silent fun and a range of 20 to 60 miles per charge. And it charges in about 3 hours. So that's what these guys are riding around on. It's kind of amazing. I don't see a maximum speed in here yet. Integrated battery. Yeah, 2.5 to 3.5 hour charging time. And it doesn't really tell how fast it goes, but I would imagine it goes a lot faster than it needs to. Whew, wow. That's just, that's kind of a crazy thing, but that's what this kid was riding on. So, you know, this is definitely an issue and it needs to be addressed. And it's very unfortunate that someone got hurt, but it's not going to be the end of this. And kids out riding bicycles on the streets get hurt a lot, mainly because they don't understand the rules of the road. I was even called in many years ago when I owned my bike shop. I was called into a court case to basically give a professional opinion of the bicycle that it wasn't real pretty. The child died on it, and he hit a tractor trailer truck, and it was really pretty sad. But it's, you get, when you own bicycle shops and you're in the bicycle industry, sometimes you get called in as a professional witness, and I was there to give my evaluation of the bicycle that the person was riding on and the condition that it was in and whether the brakes worked properly or not. And it was a bike that you would pick up at a department store where the brakes, if they do work, they work poorly at best. And anyway, that's another story in itself. So let's see here. We're going to kill this out. Let's look and see what else we got here on the list for today. The industry, I'm still in the bicycle business, in the bicycle industry here. The industry is dodging crushing steel and aluminum tariffs. Okay, this just came out a couple of days ago. The industry has survived a threat of tariffs of up to 50% on steel and aluminum products, which was proposed by juvenile bike brand Guardian with an aluminum blah 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 blah. So anyway, somehow the industry has dodged a bullet on the tariffs. Is that good? Yes. Is that bad? Maybe. It's hard to say, but you know, it does affect what we're paying for, the prices that we're paying for product that's being brought into the United States right now that we are not producing here. So, and anything that we do produce here, if we're bringing in steel or aluminum from another country, let's say it's China, because it probably is, we're facing up to a 50% tariff on that. But apparently that has been that has been dropped at this time, as a lot of things get changed around an awful lot anyway with this administration. And remember, this is a fun thing. Remember that folding bike I was talking about in last week's show? That was at the Taipei show. I went over a bunch of things that showed up at the Taipei show. It was, where is it here? A Chinese folding bike maker scored a gold award at the Taipei show. And this was kind of fun because this was the bike that I talked about that, when you folded it up, it turned into a small table. And it had a platform on it. You could put your laptop on so you could ride to the cafe, order your coffee, sit down, flip your bike into a table, put your laptop on it, and you could do your work there. It was kind of clever. And so the name of the company is Anawao Bike of China. And they took home one of two design and engineering gold awards given in the bicycle category with a version of in this particular case, Vanessa Wang, her version of a folding bike. It can transform from a pet carrier to a shopping cart to a camping trailer, camping table. It holds 16, it rolls on 16-inch tires, has quick-release pedals and a chrome moly steel frame manufactured in Shanghai. Anawao, which was formed last year, claims it's offered the world's smallest 16-inch folding bike. When folded, it equals the size of a 24-inch suitcase. The bike features more than 10 intellectual patents. And she says, Wang says, we weren't in the bicycle industry after the ceremony about her bicycling background. My husband and I love cycling because, especially with the Bromptons folding bikes, if you're into folding bikes, you know what a Brompton is. But we wanted to develop something new, something more to fit our lifestyle. And I want to take my dog out with me on my bike. So anyway, folding bikes have existed for decades, but they're often cumbersome to fold and a lack of cohesion once folded. I've seen some amazing new folding bikes and some great little YouTube videos that show just how quick and easy they are to fold. They're a lot different than they used to be, folks. It's kind of cool, and it's especially cool if you are commuting and you're using a bus and or train for transport to get you from one place to another place, and then you need to go further. Once you get off, you can just get on your little folding bike and go. Pretty cool stuff. The bike is available in China through regional distributors, and it can be purchased direct to customer right here in the US. And so there is a way of getting a hold of this, and it started with a Kickstarter program that had raised $270,000 in China before it came to the market last fall because of some manufacturing issues. The bike was out of stock for 5 months until recently. I can see why. It's a high demand kind of cool thing. So the other bicycle category winner was Giant's Seek Youth Road Bike, which the brand is touting as the world's highest performance road bike designed exclusively for teenagers. And the other award winners were Limotex Auto Drop Post, which can automatically adjust post height based on speed. Same company has an aluminum handlebar claiming to be 20 to 30% lighter than traditional welded versions. Hubsmith's HSF007 hub featured a patent one-piece planar gear structure preventing gear slippage and ensures direct power output. And Strategic Sports, an e-bike certified helmet that uses a removable modular recyclable system for circular recovery. And so anyway, that's some stuff that I had brought up from the Taipei show and some of the award winners that are out there. So kind of cool. Kind of cool stuff. Let's see what else we got here. We're gonna go on here. So let's talk a little bit about, I brought this up earlier about ride-sharing bikes, and the world's biggest bike shares are remaking cities and why safe cycling networks matter. So, you know, we talk about these bike share bikes a lot, but what's going on here is there's a lot of infrastructure change that's happening because of them. This all goes down to that same thing that I talk about all the time. If you want the roads to be safer for cycling, we have to put more bikes on the road, not less bikes on the road, more bikes on the road. And that is something that we really, really need to pay attention to. So for those who are complaining about, you know, well, you know, these bikes are dangerous, you know, there's no room for us out there at all. I got another segment on this and I'll get to that. But it's, the more bikes we can put on the road, the slower the traffic will become, because it's going to be forced into that. And I know it's not what people of cars and trucks that drive cars and trucks want, and they certainly don't want it in this country, because we drive these behemoth vehicles here in this country. It's hard to find a small car anymore. Really, really hard. It's hard to find a small practical car anymore. And that is, that's, you know, the old hatchbacks and little wagons are kind of becoming a thing of the past here in the United States, which is really, it's shameful to me. When I was a rep on the road, I drove a small European, of course, wagon that transported me from one place to another place. It was very fuel efficient, and it was also very comfortable to drive, and it had a very large boxy interior that you didn't even really know you had until you looked in your rearview mirror, because the car drove so nicely. But I could pack all my samples in there. If I really needed extra space, I could put a box on the roof rack, and I could carry even more. It was just, that's the way it happens over in Europe, and the cars aren't so large, and it's kind of refreshing to see. But anyway, Paris's Vélib became one of the continent's most iconic shared mobility systems. Since its launch, it has grown into a network of about 18,000 bikes across more than 1,400 stations, and it's logged tens of millions of rides annually, figures that put it among the most heavily used systems in the world. Paris shared bikes are not peripheral. They aren't woven into the rhythm of daily life. Across the English Channel, you go to the Santander Cycles in London, once affectionately known as Boris Bikes. Remember Boris? Similarly, became a fixture of the city's transport network, with a fleet numbering in the tens of thousands and docking stations spread across central and eastern London. Bike share rose not only as a novelty, but as a daily travel choice. Shared bikes in these cities connect with transit hubs, fill gaps in subway and rail coverage, and offer credible low-carbon alternative for short trips. They didn't become successful because bikes were present. They succeeded because bikes were meaningful, embedded in transit systems, protected by infrastructure, and recognized as a public mobility, not a side attraction. So, North America's story? Well, we're getting there. Montreal is the big starting point. Montreal's BIXI system is one of the largest and one of the earliest major North American bike share programs. Remind you, Montreal is cold and snowy in the wintertime. Just making mention of that. So it was launched in 2009. It pioneered an idea of robust citywide shared program network at a time when many of the cities were still only contemplating the concept. What began as a handful of bikes now reached a monumental scale. By 2025, Bixi's fleet stood at 12,600 bicycles, including 3,200 electric bikes spread across approximately 1,080 stations in 13 cities throughout Quebec. So, you know, If you build it, they will come. It all does work. So there, and Bixby is continuing to expand, and they're going to expand into, and they already started expanding in 2025 and will continue in 2026. In North America, the other place that is rivaling this is New York City. Yeah, New York City. They're continuing to expand in 2025 with nearly 38,000 bikes across more than 2,800 stations, with the average daily usage exceeding 140,000 rides per day. This is awesome. This is great news. So yeah, there's an answer. There is an answer here. And it makes a big difference. And the more of this product that we see out on our roads, the more infrastructure is becoming a focus, which is all good news. All right, I am going to move on because I have to talk a little bit about Tadej Pogačar. Tadej Pogačar, of course, went off to the Tour of Flanders, and he put in one heck of a boost at the end and ended up soloing away by about 30 seconds to win the race, claiming yet another classic. He is going to the Paris-Roubaix next week, and he wants another one. He's out just collecting classics, and it's really phenomenal to watch this guy. So I couldn't help but I Googled, what is Tadej Pogačar's VO2 max? Because they're not letting a lot of information out. But I was able to get what it was, which is kind of interesting. And VO2 max is known as the maximum oxygen uptake. It's a measurement of a person's maximum rate of oxygen consumption during intense exercise, recorded in milliliter, kilogram per minute. Male pros tend to have a value in the mid-70s to the high 80s, with only the very best exceeding 90. Five-time Tour winner Miguel Indurain, for example, was believed to have a VO2 max of 88, similar to Chris Froome, a four-time champion. Three-time winner Greg LeMond said his VO2 max was around 93. So, now an analysis by a Norwegian researcher published in the Journal of Science and Cycling last week has estimated Pogačar's as even higher. What is even higher? Well, this guy, I believe he's like 93 is what I saw. It's just incredible. His power output is incredible. Power happens at about 85 to 90% of VO2 max to calculate the value across six climbs. Pogačar was found to have climbed consistently between 6.4 to 7 watts per kilogram with an average power output of 442 watts. His most impressive numbers came on the time trial up Paler Gruz, stage 13 in 2025, which he is estimated to have ridden at 7 watts per kilogram or 462 watts. This guy is unbelievable. And he is continuing to be unbelievable. And we are just going to keep watching him because he is turning heads because he's sort of a superhuman. And that's kind of what's going on with Tadej these days. He won Flanders. He's just Matthew Vanderpool was second. Matthew Vanderpool, the wattage monster, was second, right? He couldn't stay with him. At the very end, it was Remco Evenepoel, Matthew Vanderpool, and Tadej Pogačar together. And then Tadej put the hammer down, and that was that. And Remco couldn't hold on anymore, but he did get third place, and Matthew Vanderpool got second. Just phenomenal, phenomenal race. If you get a chance to watch it, go onto YouTube. It's there. You can watch it for free. It's really cool. Definitely worth checking out the Tour of Flanders. And of course, coming up next weekend, we will have the Paris-Roubaix, which is a great classic. Matthew Vanderpoel said, I was riding at 650 watts and I still couldn't follow. And he cracked to finish second behind the unbeatable Tadej Pogačar. And he's one level above the rest. Matthew Vanderpoel names Tadej Pogačar as a top favorite to win the 2026 Tour of Flanders. Obviously, he won Flanders. So he's just got a 100% win record so far this year. He gets in a race, he wins it. Gets in another race, he wins that one too. He's just a phenomenal athlete, and everybody is fit and super strong, but Tadej is definitely a step ahead of everyone else. So it is interesting to watch, and we will continue to watch him, and I can't wait to see the Tour de Flanders. Tonight, though, just so you know, I'm going to be watching the UConn men's basketball team take on Michigan for the national championship. Wow. Did anyone see the shot? I know. It's basketball. It's not cycling. But it is very exciting, especially when you live 6 miles away from campus and it's the biggest deal happening right here in Mansfield right now. So anyway, I will move on because I got to finish our show up here today. So we have some things that are coming up here. The Frozen Four starts back up again now that we're past Easter weekend. So April 11th and April 18th, and that is a training race in Central Connecticut, and it's at bikeredge.com. And then I have another thing that just got sent across my desk. Ride the East is officially open for registration, and it is May 16th as they roll from Willimantic through the Airline State Park Trail and soak up Connecticut's most gorgeous landscapes. If you have not been out here yet to check that out, it is worth a visit. So come on out and check it out. It's a really, really fun ride. The 2026 Giro d'Italia is from May 8th to May 11th, 2026. The Tour de France is July 4th to July 26th. And the Ride of Silence, right here in beautiful downtown Storrs, Connecticut, Storrs Mansfield, is on May 20th, 7 p.m. worldwide, but also right here in Storrs. And that will be at the Mansfield Community Center / Town Hall parking lot. And we would love to see you there. It's a political statement. It's to honor those that have been either hit by a car while riding their bicycle or have lost their lives while being hit by a car and riding their bikes. Finishing points. Give us your opinion. Are you ready to park that car yet? Price of gas get to you yet? This might be your moment. This could be your inspiration. Go for it. Great, great, great. Anyway, remember, bicycling is freedom. Life is better for everyone when more people ride bikes. Cycling is easier and safer option for more people because when more people bike, people are happier and healthier. Our communities are safer and friendlier, and our planet is greener. Together, we can all get more people out and enjoy the love of cycling. I'll say it again. It won't be my last time. Get loud. Get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, the price of gas, and the lack of places to safely ride your bike. And do your part. Get out in front of your town. Have a big conversation. And hey, take that pedal and run challenge. Consider parking your car or truck for one day, just one day a week, and get out and ride your bike instead. You will surprise yourself. Take that pedal and run challenge. And remember, whether you're riding your bike or you're driving your car, please be safe and kind to others. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. If you're watching on Facebook Live, please feel free to comment below, or you can send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. This is Pedalin' Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Storrs, and WHUS.org. Thanks for listening. See you next week.
get on your bikes and ride.